Hello, Combi Nation. My name is Subi Sadeh. I've spent over a decade in medical device, pharma, and combination product development. Our industry feels complicated sometimes. Drugs, devices, clinical trials, submissions, sterilization, validation, design control, risk management, market access, reimbursement. The list goes on. My goal is mastery. So this podcast is to ask questions I have to people who may have the answers. Each week on the Combinate podcast, I talk to someone about their area to further understand and simplify. Whether you're a pharma person trying to understand the next wave of products, or a device person trying to navigate a pharma system you're unfamiliar with, or a newbie in both areas, I invite you to listen, and together we can simplify by combinating.
I think, as I mentioned before, the evolution of combination products, starting from your simple syringe, moving on to on-body injectors and some more complex system, we're now moving into the digital era of smart connected care. And that's where you take your traditional combination products and you add a chip to it, you add an app to it, you add sensors to it, and all of these tools to do various functions. Whether it is tracking the completion of your dose, or it's reminding you to take your medication, or transmitting that data to your physician, we're seeing an explosion of this. And I think we're seeing actually an explosion of this of everywhere, right? Even in our consumer goods, I was really surprised to see my kids' Mario Legos have sensors on it and linkages to then feed to an app. And I was like, why don't we have this on our auto injectors? So I'm really excited to speak with you today about this new wave of innovation and how we need to prepare ourselves and to make sure that these products can really meet the public needs and get there quickly.
So I had a person on the show who was really talking about technology, generally speaking. Okay. And one thing that he highlighted to me was that we were talking about AI at the time. And one thing that he highlighted to me was that when new things come, whether it's fire or electricity or whatever, right, human beings have a tendency to approach it with wonder and awe, but also fear. It's always that dichotomy between wonder and fear. So I guess before we get into the actual products, what is regulators' attitude towards these types of things? How do they effectively, in other words, how do they regulate what they don't understand that nobody understands because there's N of one, the first one or the first couple that are coming out? There's no standard, let's say.
Yeah. So having definitely been in that seat before, I think the regulators are approaching it with curiosity and they're being very proactive in this space. And so CDRH, years back in 2019, released a white paper for public feedback on AIML. What are you guys thinking of the space? What should we consider? And then a few weeks back, CDER released a paper of AI in drug manufacturing, again, saying these are initial thoughts. These are the opportunities, but these are questions we have that we would like to hear from industry. And the reason why there's so much interest in this space is because they want to be proactive and understand what are the actual industry pain points and opportunities here. They have some indication, but they want it to be informed. And so I think that they are very eager. I know I'm excited about it. But again, as you mentioned, the fear part of it is we still have to work within this regulated framework. How do we make sure that these technologies can be validated and maintain their validation without bias?
I remember early on in my career, I was going through this issue on an infusion pump, and there was this cast part that we had that was not, it didn't have strong manufacturing controls. They were basically casting it, then machining it. And at the time, this is like 10 years ago, the introduction of additive manufacturing, i.e. 3D printing, was evolving. Uh-huh. And rather than take that approach, we had decided to try to refine the existing casting process just out of a, how do you even validate that type of thing? Because the frameworks weren't set up. Now there are situations where that's done and it's even being done on cellular products than that, which you're probably more aware of with your background than me. So what does that look like? You said, you mentioned at the end there about the making sure that it's validated? Like, do they bring in software experts who did that in other industries and they start setting the tone? How does that typically work?
Yeah. So when approaching any new technology, I think you'll find that if you come to the agency with something new and a lot of questions, they will make time for it, right? Because back to our previous discussion, how is policy set? It really is starting with questions and seeing what would we respond, knowing that in their responses to a particular sponsor, they need to take that same response and give it to all other sponsors. And so in this case, for example, 3D printing, I know for a fact that the agency has their own 3D printing facilities, right? They are, if you look on their OCEL, so it's basically the arm of CDRH that is involved in research, right? That developed papers. They make sure to try to hire experts in 3D printing and more recently in artificial intelligence to inform the work. And those people sometimes support reviews within the center when they are novel in this way. So I think there is trying to gain that expertise. That's why I hope your listeners hear that if you feel you work a lot in this space, definitely reach out to the FDA. They can use this knowledge and resources to provide a more informed responses to sponsors in these questions they have.
Okay. So I remember once in my history, I was working on a product that had a really novel sterilization process. And we kind of used the Type C meeting pathway over a couple of iterations to refine how we would develop and then how we would subsequently submit the product. Is that what you're saying? I think they're not called Type A, B, C on the device side, right? But
right,
is that what you're
right.
saying?
So if it's a CEDAR-led combination product, yes, you would go through a Type C meeting. And I think this is where the digital era for combination products is reaching a little bit of a wall. So for example, a lot of these combination products with their sensors and the data and the ability to communicate, they're collecting information that can maybe potentially feed a machine learning algorithm to better improve the therapy, right? However, when you look at a recently released guidance, say CDER's comparability protocol or CDRH recent PCCP, which is predetermined change control guidance on artificial intelligence and machine learning, when it speaks to combination products, it always says, if you have questions of how this applies, please reach out to FDA's CDER's lead review division, right? And so that means depending on your therapy, you will talk to that division first. But as I talked in the previous podcast, when CDER gets a consult and it's related to this technology, especially in the digital space, they consult the same people in CDRH. It just goes to a different review division. And so it would be more efficient if you just go straight to the people who would be reviewing this, and then it would apply to all divisions, not just one division. I think that is the problem statement we have here for these smart connected care devices is that CDER, if you do it based on division, the information is siloed, right? And I remember in my role when I was being consulted, I would say all these divisions are getting the same type of platform device used in slightly different ways. And I'm reiterating the feedback. Why don't they just come to me? And I would provide that consistent feedback, right? And so, like you said, you would go through a Type C meeting, but based on that manual process of consults, the information may get lost. There might be inconsistencies. They may have not accurately responded to your question. So I think there needs to be a pivot in how the agency guides sponsors for these technologies and maybe either through OCP or directly through CDRH, say, this is the single source of truth. Speak to these folks and then move and then apply it to your CDER-led review files.
So what products are we talking about here when we say connected devices? What are we talking about?
Yeah. So I think like with all combination products, it always starts in the insulin space, right? I think those are just before combination products was a term, right? Because there was a need for the patient to get their drug dose accurately and for there to be a strong connection with their HCP and informing them. So that's where you've had the emergence of, say, an app telling you, calculating the dose that you needed to take, right? And that was based on an algorithm that was developed and validated through literature. So that is something that then they said, well, we have this app, and they say, we have this pen injector, or we have this infusion pump that delivers them. Let's connect those programs so that there's an ecosystem that supports you. And with that connectivity, and of course the internet, you can then transmit that information to your HCP. And so that was the beginning of connected care in the insulin diabetes space. And then they said, well, we have these platforms that can also work for other therapies. So I think a very popular model is the pegfilgrastim. It's an on-body injector in an app where the app on the phone can connect to your on-body injector. And then they have auto injectors that are also connected to the app that maybe provides medication reminders, but it can track, say, I delivered the dose or the dose was incomplete. And so this is another space for connected care is, where are those functions regulated, or are those functions not regulated? And even within one software, you can have different functions can be regulated, and you have to just take the pieces and ask the right questions, because you also don't want to overregulate this space, which is why the agency is looking for new tools to appropriately regulate it, but also ensure innovation still keeps up their pace. Because as you can see, like with the model for the insulin diabetes space, innovation is needed to improve and maintain patient safety.
And so generally speaking, we're talking about combination products where there's a drug delivery element. Is there a device-led, drug-led kind of situation when it comes to these devices, or is it typically more on the drug-led side?
So a lot of these are drug-led combination products. Right. And a lot of that has to deal with the fact that there is an appetite from being an investment perspective. Right. So say you have drug company A that has this great drug and it delivers it with a vial and syringe. Right. And then drug company B, same drug, but they deliver it in an auto injector that then can link to your app and tell you when to work. So again, combination products can work as differentiators and maybe with that improved patient adherence, improve clinical outcomes. So I think now another area that we're seeing is how smart connected care can be used from a manufacturing perspective for combination products to ensure the overall product quality. And so I think there is some recent notice of this from CDER and their in drug manufacturing, which is regulated in a different way, but can significantly impact the overall quality of combination products.
Can you dive a little deeper in that? How so?
Yeah. So it starts with the concept of artificial intelligence and unit level identification. So I think like you talked about, everyone is a little bit in awe of like, look what ChatGPT can do, or look what artificial intelligence can do and machine learning can do.
Have you used it?
I've only seen it in the news. I haven't had time to use it yet, but I've seen some interesting examples.
It's crazy.
But I think what I care about is the how, right? How will you develop this algorithm and how will you validate it? So take the simple combination, right? A pre-filled syringe and a needle safety device. How will you have your algorithm in drug manufacturing track the syringe and ensure it's being manufactured efficiently, right? And so there is new technology like an RFID that can be added to up down to the primary containing level, but it could be added to other systems, the secondary packaging and what have you, that can sense it as it's moving through the manufacturing line. And so like any algorithm, you're feeding it information, right? And in the output, as you're doing inspections, you can say, well, this syringe did well, this syringe didn't do well. And so when you're filling about 8,000 syringes and you see an issue traditionally in visual inspection, you may have to throw out a couple hundred syringes or maybe the whole batch. Whereas with this technology, as it is down to the unit level, you maybe only have to isolate those few syringes. And as you have that information of data encoded into those RFIDs, you can then feed it into your algorithm to improve the overall operational efficiency. And so this is the new wave of advanced manufacturing that CDER is trying to invest in. Because we've had lessons learned from the pandemic, we've dealt with shortages. And when you have certain therapies, shortages are just unacceptable. And so this technology could help in that regard, But now think, if you have all that pedigree of manufacturing encoded into that RFID, and say you have a complaint on the field, you can see how it was manufactured, right? What components was it used, like what sub-assemblies were used on the auto injector side to assemble onto it, right? And say, well, I can track maybe a root cause. Maybe I could find other auto injectors in the field that may potentially also have this issue. This is even more critical when you look at emergency medicines, right? Such as BPAP. So that type of data can power algorithms and the manufacturing side and reduce shortages. And so I think the possibilities are endless in this space.
So in my experience with infusion pumps, kind of what comes to mind is the service records that would be kept that were unit specific. And on this day, X activity on that day, out that day, and so on and so forth. In the space of hardware, more and more recently, there's been the talk of the digital twin. I don't know if you've heard of that kind of concept where you would essentially have a model going alongside the unit that was made, and it'd basically be predictive modeling. I'm wondering, when it comes to this technology that you mentioned, there are obvious use cases, right? Like, let's say you have to do an investigation. Okay, what was the unit number? Let me know what it is. All right, let me pull up what that. It's basically a unit record from start to finish,
exactly.
Right? Where you can see it. I think the part that I'm interested in is the manufacturing optimization part, because there's kind of like H. James Harrington talks about this in his book on cost of poor quality, where essentially you can improve quality in two ways. Either you maintain the same level of quality with higher throughput, mm-hmm. or you maintain the same throughput and increase quality, right? Both of those things would be considered an improvement. I guess, can you elaborate a little bit more on how that's being used, if at all? And I'm really interested in the manufacturing optimization, because I agree with you. I think if you had like a situation where the machine is basically playing whack-a-mole, where it says, oh, I already know this one's bad, out, add to the algorithm, we're not going to make it like that anymore. And it's just constantly going through that. You'll eventually get to 5.9's yield. But what does that look like?
Yeah. So I think I go back to when I had a look at performance data of the process validation mini files. And I would say, I think if you look at the test, the release testing, right? You look at the release testing to see what is the overall performance of the combination ride. You'd get an S5 and 10 of 3 batches, right? But I think if you serial up down to the unit level, you are adding thousands of data points to have a more robust model, right? So if you're looking at any data, the more, the better. And if that is linked to the process parameters of that day, this may be shift operated of that day, you can then trace what are my optimal parameters for filling, for assembly, for packaging. Was it maybe a different site that is better than the other, right? So I think it's a lot of data that can power the AI, but there is also the post-market end of it, or even the development end of it with clinical trials, right? So I don't know if this is shifting a little bit more to the other area, but a lot of the times when you're moving from like a syringe to an auto injector, and you have, say, a PK study to do, right, for that bridging, sometimes you don't know why it wasn't shown to be comparable, right? But again, if this is just a technology where you can encode with information, could you encode, well, this was injected into the arm, this was injected into the thigh, it's a chip, so it's blinded, you don't really know that, but then you can say, well, actually, we see that it is comparable if you inject in this location space versus the other, and it can then, again, power our knowledge of these algorithms and the statistics we use for the clinical validation of these drugs, because you have it down to unit level. Or maybe, hey, we had a better clinical outcome in our study with this particular batch of syringes. How are they manufactured? What drug was filled in it, right? And so I think it's, knowledge is power, data is power, because you don't know what you don't know.
Okay, so that's also a really interesting point. So, I mean, you mentioned clinical trials. Maybe it didn't click for me, but from that vision, would the user or the person administering the medication, if it's an HCP, they would select what site they're using it and scan the code, or the device would have some way to detect where it's being administered?
Right. And so I think it could be as simple as you are going to administer. I don't know if you've been to a hospital recently. I was when I had gave birth. Every time they gave me a new drug, they would scan it, you'd go on their system, right, move on. So similarly, if this is an RFID, with depending on the frequency, you would have a sensor, scan it, what it is. Okay, that goes into the database, right? And for this also feeds into the centralized clinical trials aspect that the agency is trying to push. Is we have these technology that can gather information. It can go into our databases and feed it while maintaining the blinding that is very important in these clinical studies. So as there obviously is a limit to how much information could be in there, but with encryption, encoding, depending on how the manufacturer wants to use it, you can choose what data goes in or out, or add sensors.
Uh-huh. So that's really interesting. Is there any other, so we talked about tracking in production. We talked about tracking in the hospital. Is there any other tracking in transit? Yeah, I'm just wondering, did we miss anything?
Yeah, so I think it's more of that you can encode the product down to the unit level as it proceeds through the bin, like from fill all the way to when it meets the patient, right? Because this is just a sensor, right? You can read it. And so depending on how they want to use this technology, is there a world where the user, they took their drugs, they use a scanner, see what's on there, and then that feeds into their that then feeds that, oh, physician, this is the drug I took myself, and that informs it. Or, oh, there was an adverse event. Oh, this is exactly the product I use, right? Because you're right now limited to a lot number, and a lot can be a large thousands of syringes. Maybe we can isolate that to, oh, actually it was manufactured on a specific day, filled at a specific time, filled in this specific temperature to better understand and it's the root cause of a product. Or even from a root cause, a recall process, right? If we do identify that issue in a hospital, they may have to like throw away all the medication. And I feel that is frankly unnecessary. But again, with this sensor technology, they can say combination of products with this specific tag number, they could be disposed. You have those go through the sensor, you return back the product or dispose of the product that is targeted of those, whatever IDs those are, and then you're able to keep the rest, right? So it's just providing an additional granularity for hospital systems, for patients, for reporting from a post-market perspective.
How does some of this differ from UDI serialization on the drug side? Because there is some of that. That's been going. I remember when that came out, and it was almost like when EU MDR came out. But I'm wondering, like, what is that? What's the difference?
So I think again, it's that's how. UDI can be on the RFID if that's what you choose to use it for. So I think the best way to compare this technology is like an iPhone, right? An iPhone can have multiple applications on it. It can have medical applications on it. It can have games on it. It depends on how they want to use it, because really it's an object that can hold information, right? And so from the UDI perspective, it can hold the UDI information from that track and trace perspective. But I think in addition to that, it can also hold the pedigree of this product. And I think that's the power of unit level identification.
How much information can you store on a RFID?
I think it really depends on the developer. So I think anywhere around for 96 bits. But don't quote me on this because it is evolving day to day, right?
Right.
You can have one on the primary container. And then if you want to have another one to provide additional data, that can go on the body of that secondary packaging or what we would call the device constituent. So I think the applications are limitless. And I think the best part about them is they are space efficient and also feed to the growing era of e-labeling or digital labeling, right? We're running out of room on our packaging and on our primary devices to hold information.
You mentioned process validation. Does it have the ability to include both in process controls and kind of release, or is it I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, so you have the pedigree of a syringe, and as it's going through IPC and you see it fails, it could be isolated. And then that syringe information can be fed into your algorithm. So, hey, syringes 1 through 5 of a batch of 8,000 failed IPC. What were the parameters? Let's shift our parameters a bit and run the line. And so there's a continuous improvement and evolution of the algorithm for the manufacture of these. So I think that's how it fits into IPC particularly.
What's being done on the policy side to help kind of shape this? That's kind of your meat and potatoes,
so,
right?
I spoke a little bit about this, but CDER released a white paper on artificial intelligence and drug manufacturing, where they're trying to get informed of what's the appropriate regulatory framework, what do we want to do in this space. And so I personally think that they need to partner with the device side, because there are existing recommendations on how to validate algorithms and how these should be regulated. It's a little different, but it's the manufacturing side. There's a little bit more flexibility. But I think looking at guidances, even on the device side, it's the same problem of, okay, this can apply, but go talk to someone else. So it's really pushing that question of consistency to different people rather than having that single source of truth. And so I'm always for combination products. Need a champion. They need a group focused on this rather than it just being 10% of their day job.
What percentage of combination products? I mean, it obviously has to be a rough estimation, but how prevalent are they?
On the marketplace?
Mm-hmm. I know I've worked on multi-use connected devices before, but it's been like 10% of what I've seen. I'm just wondering what you've seen or where is it going? Is it going to?
I definitely do see it growing because people are seeing it in their consumer goods, right? And you think at the very least you would see it in your therapy that it costs you thousands of dollars per dose for it to maintain its quality, right? We can do better. And there, I think there is interest. It's more of, can we overcome the hurdle in getting this technology to the market, right? It's the hesitancy you mentioned before in the past. Like, was there an opportunity for you to use their 3D printing? Sure. But you decided to go a different route because that's what we knew rather than the unknown.
Does this open the room for things that were not previously combination products to become? I mean, I'm thinking like infusion pumps, for example, that are used for drug delivery, or sets that are used for drug delivery. Does that change things for them?
It could, right? So it goes back to what are the functions of the software in these connected products? If all they are doing, say, is duplicating, if they're acting like a secondary display, or if they are just managing hospital information or repeating tasks that a user would do anyway. So if a user wanted to write down their dose in a logbook and that's all it's doing, then no, that wouldn't be a combination product. But then if they updated their app to have a function saying, well, we're going to take that information and put it into an algorithm to then tell you when is the optimal time to take your dose, not change the dose. So that could be seen as an algorithm that can then become a device and drug combination product. And so you're entering in that realm.
Where do software as a medical device type of classifications fit into this, if at all?
Yeah, so they are intertwined because at the end of the day, this is software, and you need to make sure it has a medical device function to be in this regulated space. So that it's more of, if you look at the space, you have software, and then with the you have AI ML, because that. Honestly, we're talking more about the ML space, because an algorithm is a software as a medical device. But the ML part, which is the machine learning, the evolution, that is a subset where you don't have a locked algorithm, right? It's taking data and processing it and providing a medical device function, but now it's evolving as it's obtaining more and more data, right? And so I think that plays a role, which is why we have to be very careful about our definitions and harmonization about software as a medical device, right? And how different countries interpret their definition of software as a medical device.
What about companion diagnostics?
So for companion diagnostics, it's really helped determine the dose in a clinical study for a particular therapy. That too can be part of this wave of AIML because, again, it's working through that iterative process. What is that algorithm? Is it a black box? We need to understand it, right? Because it's really trying to target therapy specific to the patient at hand. And that in itself sometimes needs to have its own IDE in addition to an IND to establish that. And this is further exacerbated by it because the risk is always an important role in whether on how something gets regulated. And so if this is an algorithm for dosing to determine something for brain cancer versus something for phlebiasis, right? The level of scrutiny on that companion diagnostic might be higher or listed for the state of the brain cancer process.
Is there anything I missed?
It's important that in this world of smart connected care, that we ask the agency to provide us a single source of truth for drug-like combination products, because right now with the approach of go to your review division in CDER, that is a very siloed approach for a technology that can cross many therapies, right? And you're actually providing additional workload to FDA on having to go to multiple review divisions if you have one platform that can review multiple therapies. And so there needs to be a new pathway to get feedback on these technologies that could apply to multiple therapies, or even how to use some of the tools like predetermined change control or comparability protocols, which are really a efficient way of managing post-market changes for these technologies, that how to best utilize those tools for this platform. So that, again, you're not having to go to one review division only to play telephone and go to the source.
Can you describe those two in a little bit more detail? So comparability protocol.
So I guess the best way to explain it, so in the CDER-like files, you have this tool called a comparability protocol. And that is where you can describe your plan changes to the agency when you have a submission, right? So you don't have to keep going back. And usually they're minor changes, right? And though I think that the FDA recently came out with a guidance, by recently, within the past 12 months, as my researcher's name, where they said this could also apply to combination products, right? Mm-hmm. And so you can imagine if you have a digital health tool, that could be very helpful, right? Because, hey, I have to make sure my app is still compatible with the recent iOS or this recent changes. Having to have a CD0, a CB30, all of that is burdensome. It's best if you just describe, these are the planned changes. This is how I'll address them. So that's a comparability protocol. So back in the device world, when we were trying to get legislation passed for predetermined change control, I said, this is a tool CDER already uses and is very successful. We need to have this for CDRH-led files. And so that passed as well. So it's the same idea where in your 510K and your PMA, you say, here is my submission. And here are my plan changes for the future. Like say I have a shelf life of 18 months for now, I want to extend it to 24 months in the future. Here is my plan testing. And if we agree on the parameters, I don't have to go back to you when I reach that 24 months. That saves me time and you time. So it's the same idea, but it's more of, okay, what do we do now for combination products? Because in both of those guidances, they said, well, go talk to your review division about what you want to do, but it applies. Right.
And so the comparability protocol and the predetermined change control, are they effectively the same thing, or are there major differences between kind of approach?
Right. I think the big difference is the comparability protocol are for CMC changes for drug-led NDA BLA submissions, whereas the predetermined change control is for the 510K and the PMA. So it's for the different regulatory pathways. But I think what they're trying to do is saying, well, if you have this predetermined change control protocol, maybe you can use those aspects and copy and paste that into your comparability protocol. We don't know, because I think, again, they said, well, combo products are hairy. We'll just go talk to your review division of how to sort this out. And
yeah, there's.
I guess what I'm saying is they should have sorted this out and they're developing this, right?
What's next in this space?
I think maybe next in the space is for regulators to, for combination products, to all talk to one another and be more prescriptive of how these new policies apply to combination products. Because if they don't, we're going to end up in a situation where this company has an innovative ecosystem of products and they say, well, let's not do that because there's too much regulatory risk, right? This is tripping up our regulatory strategy where we have a known answer for a more simpler product. And I think we want to stop that from happening. These innovations can really improve overall patient care. So I think we need to do better in this space.
Where can people find you, Rumi?
So people can find me on LinkedIn and reach out because for all I know, I didn't cover everything because as you said, maybe there were technologies and other advancements that I wasn't aware of during my time at the agency or even now in industry that can better feed this argument of combination products need their space, their champion to answer these questions of in the digital era.
Well, very good. Thanks for coming on the show again, Rumi. It's been awesome having you.
Great. Thank you.